everyone. Welcome to Bookmakers with John Ellsworth. This is Pam Stack, your production assistant for the morning. We are proud to be part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. I'd like to introduce the new host for this show, John Ellsworth, who is a best-selling author from Arizona and originally practiced law nationwide. For 30 years, he defended criminal clients across the United States. His first book, The Defendants, was published by Amazon in January of 2014. John says he enjoys being self-published because he has the freedom of choosing his own release schedule, selecting covers, and marketing his own work. It's my pleasure to introduce the new host to the network, the Bookmakers, John Ellsworth. John, take it away.
Hi, Pam. Yeah, thank you so much. Well, this is really going to be a fun experience. I'm sitting here. I live now in Southern California. I write my books in my bare feet and shorts and T-shirts every day. We're very relaxed around here. And lots of jet airplanes going over, so if you hear noise, you'll know that I'm really working right off the end of the runway here at the San Diego Airport, it sounds like. Today, I'm pleased to tell you that I have 15 books out published, and we'll have another one, number 16, in about a week. That will be a follow-up, a prequel to the Thaddeus Murphy series. I also do the Michael Gresham series. Some of my books are in the top 20 bestsellers under legal thrillers, and I'm really excited to have them there. Overall, for me, I sell a lot of books, and I'm interested in finding out why other authors sell a lot of books and how they do that. With me today is a young man by the name of Mark Dawson. Mark is a best-selling writer from London, England. His series include a gentleman by the name of John Milton and a woman by the name of Beatrix Rose. Mark is also what I would call the Facebook king of advertising. He's taught me and lots of other writers how to advertise successfully on Facebook, how to arrive at positive returns on investment and investing on in advertising on Facebook. And I know we're going to have a wonderful time talking to Mark. Mark, are you there today?
Yes, I'm here, John. Happy to be on with you.
Oh, well, thank you so much for agreeing to do this. This is the first time I've ever spoken to you, but you are one of my idols, and I'm just thrilled to have you here. Thank you for coming on.
That's very generous of you. Thanks, John.
Okay. Well, Mark, I don't know exactly what you would like to talk about this morning, but some of the things I would like to cover with you is, first of all, a little bit of your history. I understand that you started out in traditional publishing some years ago.
Yeah, that's right. I was originally published traditionally by Macmillan in the UK around about 1999-2000. I had a book out. My first book was called The Art of Falling Apart, and my second book was called Subpoena Colada. And they did okay. I was surprised that it was reasonably easy to get an agent and then reasonably easy to get a publisher. But I got pretty decent advances for those two books as well. But at the end of the day, the disappointing thing about it was that those books just didn't seem to be getting any kind of promotion, no marketing push. A lot was left to me, and that wasn't really the deal I thought I was getting into in exchange for 90% of the royalties going to the publisher. I didn't feel that was equitable. And those books didn't do very well. Looking back on them now, they're probably not the best books in the world. In fact, they're certainly not the best books in the world, but they didn't get that much love. And very quickly, they kind of disappeared. And I stopped writing for 5 or 6 years.
All righty. Thank you for that. Mark, something I've always wondered about, I've never been trad pub, but I've always wondered why publishers, the big five or the big four, whatever they are now, will publish a new writer and then give them zero publicity, zero support in the sale of their books. What is the market theory of that? I mean, I don't understand it.
It's odd. I mean, I think that the whole model is broken these days. What tends to happen is that, at least what seems to happen from my perspective, is if you get a very big advance, so, back in those days, like a big six-figure advance, then you'd get a comparable amount in terms of marketing and promotional spend, presumably, I guess, to recoup that big advance. And then these would be the books that they'd tabbed as being the really successful ones. But at the same time, they're kind of acquiring significant numbers of other titles at a reasonable expense to them. I was paid maybe $100,000 for those two books. And it just doesn't make sense to me that all of the marketing budget would seem to be focused on the kind of the things that they think are going to be the big hitters, and the
Okay.
others are kind of left to fight for themselves, and that doesn't make any sense to me.
Okay. All right. And since that worked or didn't work for you to the extent that it did or didn't, you since then have jumped into self-publishing, indie publishing, just with 110% of your effort, it seems like. So this has been a very different experience for you to indie publish, isn't that true?
Completely true. And I've been doing this for, I guess, about 5 years now, and it's been an amazing experience. I love everything about it, really. I love, obviously, the writing. I've always loved writing, but fortunately enough, I also enjoy the marketing and the promotion. I love getting contact from readers and developing those readers into fans and eventually into friends. And I like the responsibility of everything being on my shoulders. So if something messes up, odds are that's my fault. And I like to know that I'm in control of everything. If it goes well, I'll take the credit. If it goes badly, I take the blame, and I'm happy with that.
Oh, that's great of you, Mark. Now you have a series, the John Milton series, and you have a second series, the Beatrice Crowe series. Are those two series related in anyhow in terms of their universes?
They are, yes. So Milton came first, and I wrote four novels in that series. Got up to a book called Ghosts, and Beatrix appears as a character in Ghosts. And I knew fairly early on, whilst I was writing that book, that she had a story to tell herself. So I kind of changed horses for, I think I wrote the three Beatrix books. They're around about 60,000 words each. They're short novels. And I wrote those over the course of 3 months in 2014, I think, and then put them out about 6 weeks apart. And they've done extremely well. Readers love them. Amazon, Thomas & Mercer acquired those and republished them. And it's those three books that have been optioned by a fairly major Hollywood producer for a possible feature film adaptation.
Well, good on you. That's wonderful. We'll talk more about that in a minute. I would like to know, you have I've read your posts before on Kindle, on the Clipboards and some other places before about how you launch books. And I think the launch of a book is really, really important. I know I work at it pretty hard myself when I'm doing it. But your successes are probably two universes greater than what I'm doing. And I'm just amazed. You always launch, it seems like, in the top 200 on Amazon. You'll have 100 reviews within 24 hours, it seems like. How are you pulling this off? What is your secret sauce for this?
It's mailing list. It's my focus for the last couple of years has been on building a big and active and relevant, engaged mailing list. So I've got about 50,000 readers on it now as we speak.
Wow. Wow.
So that's with some fairly accelerated growth. I think at the start of 2014 I had 2,000 on the list. So it's taken me a couple of years to really boost that. And once you've got a list like that, and if you deploy it carefully, you can filter enough sales through for Amazon to well for it to rank highly by itself with no kind of promotional assistance from the retailer. So the last Milton book, which is called The Jungle, that launched to number 89 in the US and 49 in the
Wow.
UK, and was number 2 worldwide on Apple, which was pretty cool.
Incredible.
And that's all, that's all thanks to the list and the reviews that I've got a team of 700 advanced readers who fulfill a number of roles for me. One of them is to get the books in advance. I don't even say in exchange for an honest review. I say that if you feel that you'd like to leave a review, that would be great. And most of those guys, they're very good. They'll read the book. They feedback with things I might have got wrong, so it could be fact check things for me. They'll pick up typos that may have slipped through the editorial process. So by the time the manuscript's ready, it's clean, it's accurate. And then when I launch it and I tell them that the book is out, they'll review it. And sometimes they also buy it as well, which is incredibly generous given the fact that I've already given them the book for free.
All right.
And so there's the secret sauce. It's not rocket science. It's just a real focus on building that list and then developing super fans from within the list.
Okay. Boy, you've raised some really good points here. Now, for the newer writers out there that maybe don't do a list or are just now starting a list, Among writers, I see lists referred to and the list getting as organic lists and lists that are basically retrieved by advertising with what maybe Nick calls reader magnets. I'm not sure what you call them. Probably the same thing. And it's been the theory of a lot of different writers that I've read on the boards and talked to that the organic lists are much more they're much more sticky than the lists that are picked up through, say, Facebook advertising. I have found that somewhat to be the case, but then on the other hand, I haven't had that much experience with organic lists in particular. You mentioned that with your list, you have some very involved readers. What is the difference between what I might be doing, where I'm just getting a list of people and every now and then advertising a new book to them, and in the meantime, between those, remaining somewhat mute and not saying a whole lot to them? What's the difference between that kind of approach and what you're doing with your list, Mark?
In terms of the actual communication of the list, I think we're probably quite similar. So I'm not an author who bombards my list with weekly updates about, you know, my writing process or what my office looks like or things like that.
Right.
I do that more on things like Facebook. So I've got a fairly decently sized Facebook following now, and I'll do Facebook Live videos, which is a fairly new tool that Facebook's rolled out for everybody. And that could be just taking my phone out and having a quick chat about what I've been doing that day. It's very, very informal. It doesn't take me any effort. It's not like blogging. It's in good engagement. It's really nice for people to be able to see me talking live. And they can find comments, which I can respond to, and all that kind of stuff. So that's all good. The actual list itself, so the 50,000, I only communicate with them when I've either got something new that I think they'd like to know about or a deal I think they might like to take advantage of. But in between those times, I don't reach out to them too often.
Okay. But yet your readers are engaged, perhaps more in the sense of that than what the organic supporters are talking about. And is there anything in particular you do to keep them engaged? I mean, do you have giveaways? Do you have contests? Mm-hmm. Do you have time with the author? Stuff like that. Exactly how do you engage when you do?
Yeah, well, I mean, as a kind of to go back a step, the people who say organic reach is more sticky, more engaged than kind of acquired subscriptions, they're right. People who read a book and then see the call to action at the end of the book and then sign up, they at least have read the book. So you can be fairly confident that they liked what they've read enough to want to know a bit more about you as an author. So it's definitely true that they are more engaged. And I see that with my open rates and my click rates on my campaigns when I'm sending them out. But to some people will kind of dismiss the possibility of building lists through things like paid traffic, Facebook ads, Google, YouTube, whatever. And those people are short-sighted because although the open rates and the click rates are lower, they're still significant. And those are potential readers who maybe will buy all of the rest of your books. You can recruit your advanced team from those kinds of readers. So it's still a fundamental part of my list building strategy. So That answers that question. Your last question was, how do I engage with them? How do I keep them fresh? Well, but that is really with things like live video. So as a practical example, when I did the launch for the last John Milton book, I set a date on a Saturday evening, my time, 10 o'clock my time. And I created a Facebook event, kind of a launch party. And I said, I'll be broadcasting live 10 o'clock my time for about an hour. If you want to leave me questions, I'll answer anything you want. So I had a lot of questions left. He was very engaged. There were, you know, between 100 and 150 people on all the time, and some of those would be cycling in and cycling out. And at the end of the process, because Facebook is trying very, very hard to compete with YouTube in terms of being the place where video is consumed, it gives you very, very wide organic reach, by which I mean it will show that video to many more times than would be the case if I'd just written a kind of a text update and posted it to my page. So I don't remember exactly what the stats were, but it was the organic reach was in the high tens of thousands, possibly even low hundreds of thousands. So it's a really, really good way to engage your list and then reach beyond it.
And this is something that Facebook does now that's available to just anyone, is that right?
Yep. So have you got a page for your series, a Facebook page?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so if you on your phone, Or I think on your tablet, if you go into create a post, you'll see in the kind of the options where it says, you know, post or image or whatever, one of the options will be what looks like a little radio icon. If you click that, it will give you the option to broadcast live. And I strongly recommend people look into that. It's not many people are doing it right now, and it's really powerful.
Well, that's a great win for me today to hear that. I had no idea about it, but I'll be looking into it this afternoon. let me posit a theoretical to you, if I may, as one lawyer to another might say. Take the new writer who maybe has 300 people on his Facebook list, or maybe they've got been around a couple of years and they've managed to accumulate 1,000, let's say, from organic signups. Mm-hmm. If that person suddenly decided that, you know, Mark sounds pretty good here, and I would like to have 50,000 on my list, how would I go about growing that list to that kind of exponential factor, just based on what the things I could do?
Yeah, okay, so, I mean, there are lots of ways. You've got to, first of all, optimize all the kind of organic ways that people can find you. So make sure that your call to action, so the indication that something is available in exchange for a sign-up, is available on your product page, on your all of your social media channels, and we mentioned before having something to give away. That is necessary, I think, these days. Maybe 10 years ago, you could just have said, "Look, if you want to learn more about me and when my new books are out, just give me your email address." But that doesn't cut it anymore. Those offers are not effective. Email addresses are very personal. People are worried about spam. You need to sweeten the deal with something valuable. So I give away a couple of books for people who come on and join. So I think people have got to get into the mindset that that is something that is useful. It doesn't have to be a novel. Could be a novella. Could even be something smaller. I've got a kind of a two-page character sheet that I put together about Milton. It took me 2 hours to do that. Cost me nothing. And that's a very attractive offer in terms of how people are reacting to it.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yep. So yeah. You can do that. And then when you're ready, when all of that is optimized and all of that's free, doesn't cost you anything to get all that ready. And you need to, things like you also need a website and your landing page, so the place where traffic is going, where they can sign up, that's got to be optimal. Language has got to be right. It's got to look correct, function properly, all that kind of stuff. But assuming that's all done, then I'd say you're ready to start thinking about sending paid traffic, finding other ways to get traffic to that page. And right now, Facebook ads are probably the best way to do that.
Okay. Now, I have taken a course that you offer, a Facebook advertising course. I think I was one of the first group to take it. And I believe that's found online under selfpublishingformula.com. Is that correct?
Yep, that's correct.
And when I took selfpublishingformula.com into my house and had a good look at it, I learned from you that there are basically two things that I might like to do with my Facebook advertising, one of which is to successfully acquire and build a mailing list through one approach, and the other thing I could do would be to sell books to people, which is really the key bottom line, I think, for all of us.
Mm-hmm.
Are those still basically the two things that your course suggests to people they can do through Facebook advertising, or has more been added on now?
We've added more. I mean, there are modules now on Twitter. We've got one on YouTube coming up, and we'll develop some other bits and pieces. So there's copywriting and things like that involved now as well. But the main objective, people buy the course and take it because they want to learn about those two objectives. And of course they're linked. So, I mean, there's no point in just building a mailing list just for the sake of having a mailing list. You're going to use that to sell books indirectly.
Okay.
But the other stream, so the other thing we teach, selling books via ad, that's much more immediate and direct. So people will see or learn how to place ads in the news feeds of people who are likely to like that kind of fiction or nonfiction indeed. And then we try and show them how to make it more likely that those people will click on the ad, and then we'll go over to the product page and you know, hopefully buy the book.
Okay. When I took your course, Mark, I was really a novice. I basically knew where Facebook was and how to get a Facebook page going, but that's basically all I knew. As I remember, your course took me through the mechanics of creating a Facebook ad, the mechanics of publishing a Facebook ad, even what kind of images to use, what kind of textures to use in images, the words that I might want to use in images, how to sell, how to soft sell. In other words, you took me through it from start to finish, and by the time I was done, I was able to pretty successfully put together a string of Facebook ads that basically built my own list from around 300 that I had acquired organically over my first year to somewhere around almost 9,000 now when I'm in my 30th month of publishing. I would like to move into the 30, 40, 50,000 bracket, and because of that, I've even signed up a second time for your course, this time in the name of my virtual assistant who's taking the course, and hopefully between the two of us, we'll be able to come up with some pretty significant advertising avenues and also ways of acquiring more sign-ups. If a person wanted to take your course along those same lines as what I've done, when could they sign up for that kind of thing? I mean, is it going to be available now, or is it available now?
Yeah, weirdly enough, it is open now until, I think, as we record this, the date is it's the 8th of June. We're open until late on the 13th of June, so about 5 days still to sign up. And then we close it, so it's not available all the time, and the reason for that is because I'm quite heavily involved in helping people. I'm in the Facebook private group that we've got, and I'm answering queries all the time. I'm trying to balance that with continuing to write as well. So I'm only comfortable with a certain amount of people at any one time taking the course, so we cap it, and then when we've kind of filled the cohorts, we'll close it until the next time, which will probably be November, I think. So, yeah, but in the meantime, if people are listening to it when the course is closed, they should still go over to the page because we've got a series of free videos that teach people how to use Facebook's lead generation tool. So this is a way to build your list when you don't even need a website. And it's a completely self-contained free course. It's not one of these courses where I'll say, here are three things you need to know. And the fourth and most important thing is a bait and switch. You've got to sign up and pay money and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I'm absolutely not ever going to do anything like that because I think it's dishonest. And you know, if you ever catch me doing that, you've got permission to tell me off because it's just not going to happen. So people should sign up and they can check that out for free. And then when the course goes live again, I let people know.
Okay. All right. I got an email from you today, probably automatically generated from your course or the people that have set up your course anyway. And it said that congratulations are in order. You now have like 400 people taking the course this time. Is that approximately where you are?
Yeah, it was not automatic. I wrote that in a cafe about 2 hours ago. So,
okay.
So I sent that out. No, it's about right. We've had, we've opened the course three times now.
Okay.
June, November,
right.
and then now. And we've had over 400 registered students this time, which every time this happens, I'm kind of slightly taken aback that people trust me enough to go through with the course. It's very flattering. It just, you know, puts me on my game to make sure we give them the experience that they expect to get when they sign up.
You know, along the lines of what you were saying just a few minutes ago, Mark, the thing that I found remarkable about your course was that once it was over, I didn't just go back to your page and find a slammed door. Instead, you have put up a private Facebook page where people like me have been allowed to post and ask questions, and there are literally hundreds of other people on there who come to you with answers and their histories and stories of how they did certain things that I might be trying to do. But even more impressive is that you are on there too in person. And I've had you answer my questions. I've seen you answer dozens and dozens of other people's questions. And so I guess when it comes to engagement, you really stand behind your product and are there for people once the course is over. Now, in my case, how long can I keep coming back to that Facebook page and asking questions as I go along here? For me, it's been almost a year since I took the course. Is that going to remain available to me, or am I going to be kicked out at some point?
No, never. No, it's forever. I think it would be wrong of me to suddenly close the door. So, no, that's, once you're in, you're in. And one thing we've done since we've iterated the course, things change occasionally. So Facebook may change things, and I will go back and re-record things so that it's always current, and everyone, previous students will always get that, and they're not going to end up with an obsolete version of the course. And every time we launch, we have a new suite of bonuses available, and those are available to everyone as well. So it's not, I'm very keen to make sure people get as much value out of the course as they can get.
Okay. Okay, let me switch gears here just a minute. I would like to talk about your writing process, if I may. You've sold a lot of the John Milton, Beatrix Rose books. I think I read somewhere where you have recently passed the 1 million download point, and of course you're climbing, I know, because you're extremely popular. Let me just ask you right up front. I have my theories about my writing and why the books that I sell, why they sell. With regard to your writing and your characters, are there certain choices you're making when you're writing one of your mysteries, one of your thrillers, that will help guarantee the success of that book? In other words, there's writing to literary fiction where we're exploring our youth most of the time, and I don't mean to offend literary fiction writers, but a lot of that type of fiction does seem to be geared toward first-time writers, whose main topic, of course, in their 20s when they're getting their MFA, is their youth, because they just don't have that much more experience. But with you, you're way beyond that, and you're writing about made-up worlds, and you're writing about made-up universes. Is there something that you're aiming for in each one of the books that you're writing in those universes that you know will help propel the reader forward inside that book and keep them wanting more and more of not only that book, but of the character and successive books?
When I started writing those original early books, in fact, before that, I was like those younger writers, and I was very keen to write, you know, kind of great prose. I'm a big fan of people like Martin Amis and Brace and Ellis and writers like that. And I wanted to, you know, to win the Booker Prize over here and to get, you know, garlanded with praise. And as I got older, I realized that was just youthful stupidity. Number one, I'm just not that kind of writer. I'm never going to be winning prizes for my fiction. And it took me a while to be comfortable with that, but I am comfortable with that now. And what I write is I'm a pulp fiction author. I write propulsive books that are very difficult for people to put down. And that's not easy to do. When I was younger, I thought I kind of dismissed that as just too easy. But it's quite difficult. Not everyone can do that. There's an art to it. You've got to have an understanding of pacing, and the pages have to turn. I mean, my publishing company is called Unputdownable Limited, and that's what I strive for every time. It's to give someone an experience when they open the book that they find very compelling. And one of the, I get these emails quite a lot, and it's always flattering. And I didn't believe it at first, but I've had them enough now that I do. People say, look, I started to read this when I went to bed at 10:30, and damn you, I was still reading at 4 in the morning, and now I'm late for work. So that's really, if you can produce something that is that addictive and that compelling, I think you've done something quite special. And that's what I always aim for, is to give people that kind of escapist fantasy for a few hours that they find very difficult to pull away from.
Oh, that's incredible. I know, Mark, in my own process, when I'm writing my chapters, I use Scrivener. Maybe a lot of people do anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll come to the end of a chapter that I've just written, and I'll look at it, and I'll go, now, what needs to be right here to get the reader to go on to the next chapter? Do you find yourself tailing out chapters like that, where you'll look at it and you'll say, I want them to turn to the next page? What do I put here? How do I do this? How do you do that?
I don't do it in a structural way like that. I think I write quite instinctively. I'm not kind of putting mini cliffhangers all the way through. One thing I do more and more these days, this is after writing like 22 novels now, I will break chapters up into smaller scenes, and Scrivener is perfect for that. Obviously, it's kind of built for that kind of granular level of splitting chapters up. And I'll swap viewpoints quite a lot. Sometimes if I've got an action scene, one thing I love to do is to tell the action scene from different points of view, and perhaps kind of go back a few seconds to show an event through a different set of eyes. That can be quite an exciting way, very filmic. I mean, I've worked in the film industry for 10 years, which is probably almost certainly seeped into my storytelling. So yeah, nothing kind of, I don't have a formula that I follow. It's just kind of, I feel my way through it, but I'm always conscious that the books need to be pacey. And, you know, I use the old Elmore Leonard dictum all the time. If basically cut out the bits that readers skip, that's great advice among like millions of other great pieces of advice from that old master.
Okay. I've read several of your John Milton books, and I love them. Like the name of your publishing company, I have found them to be unputdownable. And when I find a writer like that, I keep coming back for more, and eventually I'll read all of your books. I haven't yet, but I know I will. If I were starting out today, if I were a new writer today, and I was looking for the type of character, the type of milieu you're writing in, what would I be looking for in terms of something that would differentiate me from the crowd? For example, so many books today, when I read the blurb on them, they say he's ex-CIA, or he's ex-FBI, or he's ex-Special Forces, or she is ex-Navy SEALs, whatever it is. Mm. And it's always somebody who's an ex-something. Is there a particular slant or take on those that might work today for somebody just starting out? Do you have ideas like that you could share with us?
I haven't thought about it, to be honest, and I'm sure you're right. That is a trope that you expect to find these days. Someone is always running from something in their past that's led them to a change in their circumstances, for sure.
Exactly.
I mean, I think there's spaces for I'm trying to think of who's writing these kinds of books now, but putting the everyman in that kind of a position. So, you know, taking someone who might be, you know, walking his dog and he's got a normal job, and then something extraordinary happens. Those kinds of, you know, the kind of psychological fiction books that are doing so well over here now, things like The Girl on the Train and things like that, that kind of book that makes it perhaps a little easier for readers to empathize with the main character. So, yeah, that could be an interesting slant. You take someone who is not of that kind of espionage-type world and chuck them in the deep end and see what happens. That could be quite fun.
Exactly. William Goldman had the book that, I forget, Dustin Hoffman starred in the film, but it was about just a pretty ordinary guy who got caught up in being somebody super extraordinary. And I know in my own writing, what I have tried to do in the past is start with an ordinary character and put them into extraordinary circumstances. For me, I think that's what readers are going to relate to, more the just ordinary person than they are going to relate maybe to somebody who's an ex-Navy SEAL. I was never an ex-Navy SEAL. I have no idea how those people think or how they feel about the world. Are they comfortable in the world? That kind of thing. But I am the guy who goes to the supermarket and shops for groceries, and while he's there might see a robbery in progress, and my God, how would I react? Do your books contain that kind of approach with your characters? Just ordinary people who are suddenly thrust into circumstances beyond what one might expect?
I mean, some of the subsidiary characters might fall into that kind of category, but the main players, Milton and Rose, are the kind of the archetypes. So they're not, I wouldn't say that those series are particularly original. I think they're quite enjoyable, you know, versions of that kind of trope. But you know, maybe the next series I do will be something a little bit more like what we're discussing now. That certainly does sound like it could be interesting.
All right. I want to talk too about, you have a podcast, I think, and, some of your guests and where you're going with that podcast. Would you tell us about that?
Yeah, that's been loads of fun. I mean, I listened to podcasts when I was getting, started with self-publishing. So people like Joanna Penn, who's a good friend of mine now, the self-publishing podcast, Rocking Self-Publishing. There's lots, and there's certainly more than just those guys now. But we thought it would be quite fun to do it. I'm quite well connected within our little industry now, so I know lots of the big indie sellers. So we thought it'd be quite fun to see if we could do some interviews. So our shtick is that it's James is my co-host, and he's an ex-BBC journalist, so he's very professional. All the production values are quite high. And James approaches it from the perspective of a first-time author, which is what he is. He's writing a novel at the moment. And I approach it from the perspective of a slightly more veteran author with more books under his belt. And then we go and we either have a couple of kind of head-to-head episodes where we just talk about things that I think are important. But then we bring on guests. We've had Marie Force, who's, you know, is a multi seven-figure annual romance author.
Sure.
Bella Andre, similar kind of situation. Who else have we had? Pat Flynn. We go slightly beyond the realms of self-publishing as well. So we've had Pat Flynn, who's big in the kind of internet marketing world. And I'm quite interested in a couple of, it's kind of a, I haven't set this up yet, but I think it would be fun. There's a couple of productivity guys I think would be useful. So there's a company called Brain.fm, which kind of plays ambient music that's intended to put you into a more productive state for creative endeavor. So I use that, and it's interesting. And there's another one which is slightly more, sounds a bit funny, but I'm hearing that it works quite well. There's a company called Pavlok, who provides you with wristbands to put on your wrist and will give you a mild electric shock when you do something that you're not supposed to do, like go on Facebook when you're supposed to be writing. So I may test that out and then have a podcast with the guys who make Pavlok, and we talk about how that works. Wow. I'm as guilty as anybody else about getting distracted by things when I shouldn't be.
And if I wanted to hear your interview with or your talk with Bella Andre or Marie Force, where would I go on the internet to do that? What's the URL, Mark?
So the kind of the nonfiction side of my business and all the stuff for other authors is at selfpublishingformula.com.
Okay. So, and that's the same link that I would go to if I wanted to enroll in your Facebook advertising course?
Yes, it is.
Okay. And as far as current projects, are you writing any books right now? And if I may ask, without upsetting you, I know a lot of writers don't like to talk about what they're writing, but are you writing in either of those series right now?
I'm always writing, John. I can't stop. So, yes, I'm writing the third book in a series that has been picked up by Thomas and Mercer for Amazon. So it's the Beatrice Rose is continued by her daughter, so it's Isabella Rose. And we've had one book published called The Angel with T&M about 6 months ago, a new one out actually on the 21st of June called The Asset, and then the one I'm writing now is at the moment called either going to be called The Hunter or The Drone. I'm not quite sure yet, but that's what I'm working on at the moment. So I should hit 20,000 words on that this afternoon.
Okay. Are those John Milton series books?
They're not. No, they're kind of in his world a bit, but the Beatrix and Isabella books, if you were to kind of ask me for a film world comparison, I would say they're more like the Bourne films, whereas the Milton books are more like the Daniel Craig or Sean Connery Bond films. So
beautiful.
Milton's a bit more gritty, a bit more realistic. And the Isabella and Beatrix books are slightly heavier on the action. They're, you know, there's a lot of conspiracies, a little less realistic perhaps, but they're intended to be, you know, just, you know, good fun that's difficult to put down.
All right. That's just terrific. So when can we get to one of these books? When are they going to be available again?
Yeah, so The Angel, the first one is out. That's available just on Amazon because they're Amazon exclusives, and you can get them on Audible for the audio versions as well.
Okay.
Then the second in the series is out on the 21st, so a couple of weeks from as we're recording this. And then the third one, I'm promising that I'll deliver it by the end of August, so that will probably be out just before Christmas, I would have thought.
Okay, great. Mark, one of the perennial things with me, I'm self-pubbed and I'm exclusive to Amazon, which for the new writer or maybe the non-writers in the crowd means that all of my books are exclusive to Amazon. I cannot, by agreement, put them up on any other publishers such as Kobo or any of the retailers such as Kobo, Barnes & Noble, Google, I think it's Google Books or whatever it's called. I'm not allowed to do that. Now, in my case, those are choices I've made. And in return for making those choices, I get certain benefits from Amazon, one of which is every 90 days I get to advertise my books free as freebies, and or every 90 days I get to have what's known as a Kindle countdown deal, where my books are put out there maybe for the first day or two at 99 cents, and then there's the threat hanging over that they're going to go right back up to where they were originally pegged within 2 or 3 days, so buy them now while they're hot. Most of us generally try to take a Kindle countdown deal and combine it with a BookBub in an attempt to rack up some significant sales. On the other hand, people like me, I've always gone for the free Facebook, free BookBub situations where I'll give away 40 or 50,000 books. Now you, while I am exclusive to Amazon, it's my understanding that your books are not exclusive to Amazon. Is that true?
Partly true. So some, the Beatrix and Isabella books are, because they're published by Amazon's imprint. The Soho Noir books, which were the first books that I self-published, they're also exclusive. But the Milton series, which is the ones I'm best known for, the biggest selling ones, they are, they're wide.
Okay. How do you make that decision? Why are they wide? Can you tell us your thinking on that?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I was, I totally love Amazon. Amazon's changed my life. They're still the biggest retailer for me personally. I've got good relationships with them. I speak on panels for them sometimes. So I you'll struggle to hear a bad word from me about Amazon. I think they're amazing, and they fully deserve their position as number one, given that they were the first movers into the market. So I'm also kind of fundamentally a little itchy sometimes about the prospect of having all my eggs in one basket. So I like the idea of a bit of competition, and I like to have a bit of insulation should Amazon decide to reduce the royalty rate, for example, and give everyone a flat 50% rather than 70% and 35%. So I made a conscious decision at the start of 2015 to develop my relationships with other retailers, and because of that, I've got a very good relationship with Apple now, and that was the reason why The Jungle got to number two on the worldwide Apple store. It's because Apple made it a priority to push it. I've got very good relationships with Kobo. I've met those guys, Mark Lefebvre and his team. And I'm back on Google now as well. Google reached out to me not too long ago to ask why I'd taken my books down, and could they help me get them back up again. And so I'm kind of slowly getting back into bed with Google again. So, it's a bit of insulation. It's also allowing me to reach probably more readers by going wide rather than relying on Amazon and KU to find my readers. So, and it's worked pretty well. So Apple at the moment is my second biggest retailer behind Amazon.com and ahead of Amazon.co.uk. So, I'm making five figures a month from Apple right now, which is pretty amazing.
Yeah. Mark, you said it so that I can find my readers a minute ago. How do you sell books? I mean, percentage-wise, I know you keep incredible records. You're one of those people who probably would have been a CPA in a different life. How do you sell books? What is your biggest movement, the biggest best approach you take for moving books? I know that anymore, there's so many books out there, it's an ocean of books, that a new writer can't just suddenly put a book out there and expect it to sell, that he or she has to take certain steps. What steps do you take so that your books move? I mean, is your Facebook advertising your biggest mover? Is your Facebook broadcast that you do, mm-hmm. the podcast? What makes Mark's books move?
Okay, so there's a macro answer and a micro answer. So the micro answer would be using things like BookBub. I mean, I love BookBub just like you do. They're amazing. And then Facebook ads are super important for selling books through mailing list and also through sales. So I'm projecting to spend about $250,000 this year on Facebook ads. So that's,
would you say that again? You're expected to sell what? Spend what?
Spend $250,000 on Facebook ads, something like that.
Incredible.
But that's not money I'm not going to see again. That's I'm making a positive return on that, so I'll make that back and then some on top. Otherwise, I wouldn't do it. So. There's that. Those are kind of the micro answers, and there's plenty of other ways that you can get your book visible. But the kind of the macro answer, and what I would say is a mindset thing that authors need to get into, is what we're able to do these days is kind of like digital hand selling. So it's almost reaching out to readers on an individual basis, and that would be things like answering every email that you receive, answering every, if you can, every Facebook comment that you get. So obviously I'm getting quite a lot because I'm advertising a lot. So it's just reaching out to those guys, thanking them for their comments, just being polite, being a nice guy, answering their questions. And by doing that, you can turn someone who's maybe just stumbled onto your books through an ad into a reader. And then if you develop that relationship, you turn them into a fan, then into a friend perhaps at the end of the day. And that's why I'll do things on my Facebook page, like every Thursday, I'll throwback Thursday. So I'll put out a picture of me as a kid. Just stupid pictures where I look like an idiot. And Exactly. They go down very, very well. And those live broadcasts go down very well because I can talk with my fans just like we're talking right now, and I can answer their questions. And, you know, it's just like be a normal guy. I think that's really fundamentally important. And you know, once you can do that, you can add those readers one at a time. And if you do it over a long enough time, before you know it, you've got 1,000, then you've got 10,000, then you've got 50,000.
Oh, wow. Well, let me try to quantify a little bit about what you're talking about. If you spend $250,000 over all of your ads and all of your advertising, how much might you get back from that $250,000? Just so that we all understand what kind of numbers you're talking about by Facebook advertising.
Okay, first of all, I'd say that people listening shouldn't go, oh my God, I can't, how could I possibly think about spending those numbers to make something work?
Yeah.
You don't need to spend that. That's not necessary. But in terms of a return, I would expect to get between 50 and 100% return on investment, which means I'll spend 250 and I'll make 325 in terms of that would be the comeback just on a sale. So you're making a profit on the ad. But of course I don't just have one book that I'm advertising. I've got another 20 books behind that. And I do surveys of my readers every year. So I know that the median in terms of the numbers of books that my readers read is between 7 and 8. So if you buy one of my books, hopefully if you like them, the odds are you'll continue to read, maybe you read the whole series, and then maybe you'll read every time I have a book, you'll be on my mailing list and I can sell you that new book. So, you know, it's an investment. It's an investment in my business and building up my mailing list and my readership. And that sets me in a really good position for going on into the future.
You know, Mark, I haven't interviewed him yet, but it seems to me the numbers you're talking about are better than what the Colombian or the Tijuana cartel is doing selling drugs. I mean, these are pretty incredible numbers when you're talking about 150% to 200% investment. I don't know of any investment, and I've been around a long time, I don't know of any investment that comes close to that kind of return on the type of money you're talking about, particularly where a guy has so much control over it. You can advertise, I think I'm doing $300 a day, and to me that's just terrific. Or
yeah,
I can cut it back to $20 a day with a couple of very simple clicks if I'm having a lighter month and just need to cut it back. Although that is probably contrary to what you would advise. If you're having a lighter month, maybe you'd want to advertise more, and we can talk about that in the future at some point. But for somebody who is just starting out and they take your course, your Facebook course, how much might they need to pay per day in advertising on Facebook in order to see a return that could be considered successful for them?
I would say that you start with a minimum. So the minimum you can spend on ads is $5 a day on one ad. So I'd say start with that and you test it. There is a bit of testing involved. You need to work out the combination of targeting and actual ad that's going to work most effectively. And Facebook makes it pretty easy to make those judgments. And once you get to that conclusion, then what you do is if your ad, you're spending $5 and you're getting $7 back, say, then the next day spend $7. So you just keep investing, take that initial $5, and then on the third day, maybe you make $10. So then on the fourth day, you spend $10. Before you know it, you get up to that kind of bigger level. And I did a webinar last night with a UK author called Adam Croft, who is, he took
right.
our course in November last year. And people will, if they don't know who he is, they will probably get to know him quite soon, because what he's done is absolutely extraordinary. He took one book called Her Last Tomorrow, and he started at that level, like I said, with $5 a day. And he is projecting, and I know how he's ranking because I've seen how he's ranking on Amazon. He's projecting to make $1.5 million on one book this year. It's not a box set, it's a single book.
Incredible.
It is completely incredible. He's written an absolutely stunning ad. It's very, very compelling. It's almost impossible not to click on it. And he's selling, for example, he's selling enough Create Space copies, right? So this is books he owns himself, printed on demand. He sold enough Create Space copies last week that he was number 18 in the whole of Amazon.co.uk for print, not even for digital. He was outselling J.K. Rowling, which is, you know, makes me quite jealous because he's doing a lot better than I'm doing right now. But it just goes to show that these things are possible if you are able to get that combination right.
So he took your course to get him going in all this?
He did, yeah. He was one of our November enrollees, and yeah, he initially didn't have too much success, but he worked at it. He didn't let it he was prepared to put the hours in and invest a little bit, and he's paid his mortgage off now, and he's not even 30 yet.
Oh, wow. Okay, for anybody who might have missed it, I think I've said it a couple of times now, but your website where we can go and sign up for this fabulous course is Self-Formula Publishing, is that right?
Almost right.
Self-publishingformula.com, and the opportunity to take this course is still open, I think, until you said the 13th of June. Mm-hmm. So if anybody out there is listening and they think they might want to make a slight career correction here, for me personally, I took the course. It's doing wonders for me. I sell a lot of books thanks to my Facebook advertising, and I can't quantify that yet. I haven't been doing it long enough yet. But I know that when I turn the ads off, suddenly my sales plummet, and when I turn them back on, my sales take off again. So, Mark, I really want to thank you for coming out today. One final thing, is there anything else that you would like to add here that we haven't talked about
so far? Before you leave, Mark and John, before you leave, I have a question.
Yeah?
We have a caller. Oops, we had a caller, and they just hung up. I'm sorry.
Sorry.
I didn't catch you in time. What a fascinating conversation. I'm going to let you go ahead and finish up. Thank you so much for being on the Office on the Air Global Radio Network, Mark. I really appreciate it.
Oh, it's my pleasure. So, yeah, so if people want to get in touch with me, there's a couple of ways. If they're interested in my fiction, so actually what interested in the books that I write, then you can go to markjdawson.com. Or as John says, if you're interested in the kind of the author element of the kind of nonfiction stuff that I do, so the podcast, or the course itself, the free course or the paid course, you can go to selfpublishingformula.com. And there are ways to get in touch with me on both of those sites. And, you know, as I said a couple of times earlier, you will still get a reply from me if you email. I'm fighting off kind of hiring a virtual assistant for as long as I can. So at the moment, you will still get the dubious pleasure of getting me to reply to you.
Well, Mark, I just thank you so much for coming on. You're one of the most impressive people I've ever talked to when it comes to the sale of books, moving books, how you do it, how you slant your characters and your environments for your characters. I'm just really impressed, and I know that probably the listeners here today are equally impressed. Again, for those of you who might have missed it, it's selfpublishingformula.com. I rave about it to the people that ask me about it on other websites and stuff where I'm a member, and I can't recommend it highly enough. Thank you again, Mark, and God bless.
Thanks so much, John.
Okay. Good day now.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, John, what a great way to kick off your new show.
Well,
congratulations on a terrific, terrific interview. Very, very interesting. It sounds like Mark and you also work very, very hard to keep your readers engaged with what you're doing. And I guess, you know, that's what happens when you're running a business. You've got
to do that,
correct?
Well, the bottom line, Pam, for me anyway, is to sell books. None of this is possible if I don't sell X number of books today. And along those lines, I'm trying to write stuff that, like Mark says, I'm a pulp fiction writer. In college, I majored in English, but I didn't have the nerve to tell anybody at that time. What I really wanted to write was more Perry Mason than John Milton,
uh-huh.
That John Milton, you know. And it's really good to get to be myself and to get to write the kind of stuff that I like to read. I was one of the guys who read Eye of the Needle probably 15 times before I was 30 years old. I mean, some of my writers like that, when I read them compared to reading Nathaniel Hawthorne, I was like, I know where my heart is. And so I'm very blessed today to still be able to do that and to spend my days thinking up weird situations for characters and getting them in and out of them. So, you know, I've had a level of success, but it's nothing like what he's done. And I'm just really pleased and grateful that he would spend some time with us today in his really hectic schedule. I know this is one guy who works from sun up to sundown, and I'm just very thankful. Thanks again, Mark.
Well, I'm glad that you are here, John, and congratulations on a successful first broadcast. And we'll look forward to speaking to you. Who's your next guest?
Haven't lined that up yet. I have some candidates in mind, or victims in mind rather, who have approached me when I've put out a call for people who might want to be on the show. I'm going to try to have people with a lot of experience and a lot of know-how like Mark, but I also want to get new writers on and talk to new writers and about the things they're doing. that are working for them, the things that are not working for them. This show will probably be slanted 50-50 marketing and 50-50 how it's done in terms of the writing and making things up that sell. So if there are people out there who would like to be on this show, I would invite them to contact me. I can be reached at johnellsworthfiction@icloud.com with any comments you might have. Again, that's johnellsworthfiction@icloud.com. Or if you're someone who would like to be on the show, drop me a line and let's talk. Thanks, Pam.
There you go. Have a great day. Thank you so much for being with us today, John. And I look forward to your next show.
Okay. Thanks so much, Pam, for the opportunity.
Have a great day. Sure.
Bye.
Thanks, folks. Have a great day. Talk to you next time.